Here we go. It's the Sports Rush, your daily local sports fix, 4 to 6. I am Brett Rump, along with Caleb Hatch, and you are connected on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line at 46862. Big show coming up today. Nate Atkins from IndyStar will join us to talk Colts football, what's happening down at Westfield at Colts camp. Also, we'll talk to Eric Dutkiewicz from Parkview Sports Medicine. It's time to start previewing some of the high school football teams and conferences, and so today we'll challenge Dute with a little preview of the NECC and the ACAC, which perhaps could aptly be renamed the Adams County Athletic Conference, at least for football, because it's been a long time since anybody outside of Adams County has won the football conference championship, generally a battle between South Adams and Adams Central. And we'll talk to Dute to see if that trend will continue or if it possibly could change, as he'll join the program around 5:35. Also, a lot of buzz about Sean Sedlowski signing with the Orlando Solar Bears. You know, I've kind of got mixed thoughts on this a little bit, and I understand both sides. I totally get where at some point an organization has to just feel when you're limited in the number of veteran spots you can have on a team, and you start to look at, you know, the declining level of talent, especially with the injury history. There is a point, much like the Colts are doing with T.Y. Hilton, where you really have to feel like, okay, he's not going to be one of the guys we're going to sign to plug one of those four spots. Now, if we end up with an injury or somebody decides to up and bail on us midseason or something crazy, then, you know, maybe he'd be a guy that we'd have on speed dial. But I get why the Comets decided that at some point you need to move on. And maybe the message the Comets were trying to send to Sean Sedlowski is, you know, we kind of think this is maybe the time that would be best for you to retire from hockey. And Sean Sedlowski wasn't ready to hear that. And that's one of the tough things for an athlete, is to know when is the right time. For Sean Sedlowski, he doesn't believe it's now. And so Sean is going to go down to Orlando and try to prove he's still got something left. And we had a chance to visit with him yesterday, and we're going to replay that for you coming up at 5:20 this afternoon. We talked to Sean yesterday in our first hour, so we'll replay it for our second hour audience. And if you're with us here in the first hour, we hope you stick with us until our second hour. Sean Sedlowski coming up at 5:20 this afternoon. Big news earlier today. The trial has been going on over in Russia for Brittany Griner, and the verdict has come down. And yes, it is excessively long, considering what we would determine to be the level of crime involved. Now, what you've got to realize is we pick our politicians and we choose our congressmen, our political leaders, our lawmakers. We pick and elect people based on our beliefs. And in America, there's certain beliefs we have. Maybe they've evolved and changed over time as far as our perceptions and our beliefs on the safety or legality of cannabis products. But here's the thing. We can all probably look at this and think, oh man, Russia is really sticking it to her because she's an American. Well, you have to know going into Russia that you're going to have to follow Russia laws. And they may be different than American laws. Here's one thing that frustrates me about this whole thing is, first of all, we can all agree that you know, it'd be easy to slap her on the wrist, give her probation or something, and then send her back on her way to America. And maybe that's what we feel we would do with someone that was caught like this in our country. That's fine, but we are not the ones in control here because this happened on Russian soil. But what really kind of bothers me is we can disagree on what the length of the detainment should be, what the length of the sentence should be. We can disagree that or debate whether or not Brittany Griner is being held solely because she is a pawn in a political game between Russia and the United States. We can argue all of those points. But the one point we cannot argue, and that people continually put out there, is that she has been wrongfully detained. There is nothing wrongful about detaining someone who has broken one of your laws. And Brittany Griner pleaded guilty. I mean, I think the evidence is there that according to Russian law, she broke a law. It's not wrongfully detained. Now, the question is, how long should she be detained? And we don't agree with the length of the punishment. And we think that she should have been put in jail 30 days, given a fine, and sent home. And that's fine because we all have a point of view based on being American. What would our legal system do? Well, unfortunately for Brittany Griner, it happened in Russia. And it's not like we're on the best terms right now with Russia, especially what's happened in Ukraine. So it's unfortunate that maybe she is a pawn. And you can debate that. You can argue on you know, all the politics surrounding it. But the one thing you cannot argue is that she's been wrongfully detained because in Russia, she broke a law. And in Russia, they have the right, if you break a law, to detain you. I don't know why the term wrongfully detained. And I see almost everybody who is up standing up for Brittany Griner saying that, Brittany Griner has now been wrongfully detained for X number of days or X number of months. And to me, it's not a wrongful detainment. Now, the question is she getting a fair trial? Is she getting, fair representation from the lawyers? Is she getting a fair sentence compared to what others in Russia would have gotten considering what she was charged with? Wrongful detainment would be that if she had absolutely nothing in her bag and they took her off to jail and then charged her with a crime she never committed and there was no evidence that supported the charges against her. That's not the case here. But she gets 9 years. And I think we can all agree that 9 years is a bit excessive. I don't know our legal system that well, and maybe I'm glad I don't. But 9 years to me, I think we've got some serious offenders in the United States that don't get 9 years. So, at this point, it's an excessive sentence. I think most people would agree that 9 years is an excessive sentence. But, and maybe she is a pawn in a political game. 9 years is a lot. I don't know the laws in Russia, so I can't tell you if she's a pawn. But clearly, if you are, 6'9"? If you're a 6'9 American who's very recognizable as a very public figure coming into the country and they catch you with something, it is a big day in Russia. And it's unfortunate that Brittany Griner happened to be that subject and now could be 9 years behind bars as Russia then says they don't want to negotiate anything publicly. Everything must be done privately. Well, we know, or should be able to figure it out by dotting some I's, crossing some T's, exactly why Russia doesn't want anything to be mentioned publicly as far as any negotiation here. But Brittany Griner, 9 years, that came down today. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862, Tincast Baseball. Tonight, do I need to say weather permitting? I know there's a threat of rain. Last night, we knew the rain was coming. It was no surprise. You could see the rain moving all the way across the state, and it was not going to miss us. It was a big, solid line of storms and then rain. And it pretty much was, I guess, just a matter of waiting until the storms got here. And they hit just about game time. But tonight, it looks like if anything hits, it would be extremely scattered. So I'm keeping the fingers crossed that there will be baseball tonight. 6:45, the pregame show out at the ballpark. The Hoopy Insurance Services pregame show, followed by first pitch at 7:05. It is a thirsty Thursday. It is a single game. So, you might have heard that they got rained out last night. The doubleheader is going to be on Saturday. And so if you do have a Saturday ticket, this is one thing to keep in mind, because we see this every time there's a doubleheader, that the first hour or so of the doubleheader, there's a very, very small crowd. because a lot of the people that bought tickets months in advance or weeks in advance or are part of a group, they don't pay attention to what happened the day before. And sometimes there's a rain out that means now you've got two games of baseball instead of one. And so I'm telling you, if you've got a Saturday ticket, that you need to get there early because there's two games, not one, on Saturday night, and they start at 5:35, 1 hour earlier than what is on your ticket. And there's still fireworks after the game on Saturday, and we've still got the broadcast right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. So football tonight, Caleb.
Whoop-de-doo.
We can call it football. Hey, it's closer to football than the Pro Bowl. It's not guys we know. It's probably a lot of guys that are trying to make the team or trying to earn a spot higher on the depth chart. But it is the Raiders in Jacksonville, the Hall of Fame game in Canton. Boy, this would be really good if it was like a real game. Derek Carr versus Trevor Lawrence. I think that'd be fun to watch. I have no idea what kind of team Jacksonville is going to have this year because I don't know if we know what the full effects were on Jacksonville under Urban Meyer. So I think we've got to see what does Jacksonville look like now without the Urban effect. But the one thing though for football lovers is when you know you've had the Hall of Fame game that it's time to get serious about the NFL. Because you're going to have exhibition games coming up, not this weekend, but next weekend. Three exhibition games, and boom, by the week after Labor Day, we're going to be having real NFL football. It is not that far away. Last night, Juan Soto and Josh Bell joined their teammates in San Diego. Welcoming committee included Fernando Tatis Jr. When the guys arrived in the clubhouse, Tatis was there to greet them. A video that got posted on social media. But it really brought a spark and an energy to Petco Park last night, and the Padres defeated Colorado 9-1. Manny Machado seemed to be the beneficiary of batting in between Soto and Bell. Soto batted in the 2 spot, Machado in the 3 spot. Josh Bell was the cleanup hitter. Manny Machado went 3-for-4, including a home run last night. Soto and Bell combined to go 1-for-5, 4 walks. And Brandon Drury, wouldn't you know, the Cincinnati Red, or should I say former Cincinnati Red, would do something really special his first at bat when he's not a Cincinnati Red. Did you hear about Drury last night, Caleb?
Grand slam on first pitch, right?
First at bat. I don't know if it was the first pitch.
Okay.
It was
first at bat.
It may have been his first pitch, but it was his first at bat for the Padres in the first inning. Bases loaded. Grand slam. So I guess that deal works pretty well. So Padres jumped out to a 5-0 lead in the first inning. That was plenty of run support for Blake Snell, who went on to get the victory. And so far, the Padres with their new teammates, Soto, Bell, and Drury, are off to a 1-0 start. 46862, Parkview Sports Medicine text line. That's how you connect with us on this Thursday. Always love talking to sports fans at this time of year as I'm out and about during the day. It seems like I run into offices or businesses where somebody inevitably will recognize me or see my logo on my shirt. And want to talk sports. And the big talk right now, the football season. And I've had some Purdue fans who are not exactly high on this season. And I'm shocked by it. I mean, first of all, Purdue football had a good year last year. They're coming off a momentum season where they built some momentum. They won a bowl game. I would think Purdue fans would be a little more excited than what I'm sensing. I think what happened is they forgot about the football season because they were disappointed by the outcome of the basketball team, because I think they were expecting a little bit more out of the basketball team. Well, here's the rundown. Purdue has a schedule that should get them at least bowl eligible. No question about it. And I think if you're Purdue and you, number one, can consistently get to a bowl game, you are winning. I mean, that is, to me, considered success at Purdue, is consistently being a bowl team. Don't have those 2-9 seasons or 2-10 seasons. Don't have 3-win seasons. And, you know, Purdue has challenged themselves this year with their non-conference games, because you look at the non-conference, it might be tougher than what they face in the Big Ten. They go to Syracuse, where they got to play in the dome, and then they have a home game against FAU. And you always know, fear any team that comes from Boca Raton, Florida. Did you happen to know the Florida Atlantic is in Boca Raton, Caleb, just across town from our house?
I did not.
The mighty, what are they? I don't know. What are they? Eagles, Falcons? I think they're some kind of bird. They got it. Well, the Boca Bowl.
They're the Owls.
Okay, that's a bird. They're an owl. Not quite as intimidated by an owl as you would be maybe an eagle or something. But anyway, they've got a great stadium. I mean, their stadium's nicer, bigger than what you've got like at Ball State. I mean, it's a big stadium, and it's over toward the northeast side of Boca Raton. But we're on the west side of Boca. We're on the, see, because Boca's divided. The further you go east, the closer you are to the water. Guess what happens to home prices? Yeah, that's why we're way out west. We're almost sitting in the middle of the Everglades. That's about the only place we could afford in Boca. But yeah, so Purdue will play Syracuse and FAU. Don't think FAU is the same team. They got Targart now, right? Didn't they hire Targart as their coach?
Willie Taggart?
Taggart. The guy who coached at Florida State for a short time.
Yes, he is the head coach at FAU.
Because they like to get big name coaches, or coaches with a name. And because Lane Kiffin was there for like, what, 2 or 3 years? But anyway, yeah, so FAU will come to Ross-Ade Stadium. But if you look at Purdue's schedule, overall, they get such a break from the Big Ten. Three teams that Purdue doesn't play this year: Ohio State, Michigan, or Michigan State. Purdue would be an underdog all three of those games. And they don't play any of those three teams. There's no Ohio State, no Michigan, no Michigan State on Purdue's schedule. Purdue's toughest game is going to be a road trip to Madison to take on Wisconsin, and that is game number 8, October 22nd, 10-22-22. Purdue should be a bowl team. So boiler up, fans. Get ready. Should be a good season for Purdue just because the opponents are weak. So that, you take what you get. 46862, if you've got questions, comments, or suggestions. The NBA, have you noticed, Caleb, since football has started, how quiet things have gotten in the NBA? And I don't know if it's just because the reporters have changed focus on football, but we were talking quite a bit, and there were reports regularly out there about Kevin Durant, about Miles Turner, and about reported trades that might be possible. And it's like all of a sudden everything has gone silent. I mean, I thought, is there a moratorium period for trades in the NBA that I don't know about? Because nobody is talking right now. So you've still got Kevin Durant in Brooklyn. You've still got Miles Turner down in Indianapolis. Have you heard anything?
No, there's nothing new. I mean, I'll be honest, I'll be surprised if Durant gets traded even before the trade deadline. For Brooklyn, I mean,
what is it? 6 number one picks plus a couple of players. I mean, it's a ridiculous ask
for a guy who's what, 34, and who's never really won anything on his own. I mean, Steph Curry was the leader of the Warriors teams that Durant played on, and if Durant's going to go anywhere and be on a contender where he's going to fit in, the Warriors are probably the only option.
And Miles Turner still in Indy.
That may come down to the trade deadline, but there's no way the Pacers can hang on to him through the end of the upcoming regular season.
Seems strange to me that they haven't found a deal for Miles Turner. And I don't know if they're asking too much, if there's not a big market out there for him. NBA has gone very quiet over the last couple of weeks. Of course, what's not going to be quiet, high school football, just 2 weeks from tomorrow, we get it all started. And it's big. I mean, we've got 7 hours of high school football coverage that kicks off with the 4 o'clock Sports Rush here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Following that up at 6 o'clock, live from the stadium with Jim Shevlin, Eric Dutkevich, and Shannon Griffith. It is our Parkview Sports Medicine High School Football Tailgate pregame show. I hope you look for us, hang out, spend some time with the guys as we preview the night's action in high school football. We will go conference by conference, game by game, give you breakdowns, expectations, predictions. It is all jam-packed into a pregame show from 6 to 6:50 right here at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Then our high school football game of the week. Shannon Griffith and I back together again. Like a happy couple that can't find anyone else to go partner up with. No, I'm kidding. We love working together. I mean, but Shannon's been absolutely a godsend. He's smart. He does a great job on the color. I couldn't be happier to have Shannon Griffith once again partnering with me to do high school football coverage this year. I'm very, very excited about it. We'll get started on August 19th, 2 weeks from tomorrow. Our postgame show, our debut postgame show presented by Indiana Physical Therapy is going to be happening at the Pine Valley, or no. Coventry Pizza Hut. That's right. I got the wrong side of town. The Coventry Pizza Hut on August 19th. We start things off around 9:30, giving you a complete rundown of all the night's action, final scores, coaches' reactions, and more. That is the Indiana Physical Therapy post-game show live from the Coventry Pizza Hut coming up 2 weeks from tomorrow night. And, of course, 2 weeks from today, it'll be the debut of the High School Football Picks of the Week presented by Midwest Concussion Clinic back for another year. We'll make the picks every week on Thursdays and then replay them for you on Fridays right here on the Sports Rush at 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. You're not all that excited about the Hall of Fame game tonight, Caleb. Trevor Lawrence isn't even playing. Is he not even dressing?
Yeah, he's not going to play.
Derek Carr even make the trip?
I don't know. Travis Etienne also not playing for the Jags. So, I get it. Football's back, but it's preseason football, and you're not going to find me getting excited about preseason football.
You know what's sad about this? Think about it, Caleb. You can get a free ticket to go to a camp and see starters take more snaps than if you pay for a ticket to an actual game. What are tickets to the Hall of Fame game? Any idea what kind of, I mean, is that a $100 ticket? Is it a $75? I mean, I don't know what the tickets cost, but think about that. You get a free ticket to go down to Westfield and watch Colts camp, and you can watch all the snaps being taken by Matt Ryan. They're running 7-on-7. They're running some 11-on-11 this week.
So tickets for this game that are still available.
Of course they are.
You're looking at $80 a ticket.
$80 to see.
And this is, you're in the upper deck.
A USFL
on the,
game.
On the main grandstand, like in the corners. Or on the other side of the kind of the press box side. They're all $80.
They have sold a significant amount of tickets, or at least they have a reserve section that's pretty
sick. Yeah, the lower bowl is largely sold out. Huh. You just have the ends
on the... That stadium's not big, though.
By away side? No.
10,000, 15,000?
Probably a little bigger than that. Probably closer to 20.
Yeah.
But yeah, it's not much of a draw.
46862 is Parkview Sports Medicine text line. That's where you can always connect with us. Any questions, comments, or suggestions? We're going to talk some Colts football and what's happening down at Westfield. And we're going to get the answers from Nate Atkins from the Indy Star. He covers the Colts beat. We'll talk to him next right here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. Don't know if you heard the story of Paige Beckers, the star, the UConn star, who apparently in a pickup game on Monday tore her ACL, is expected to be out for the season this upcoming year. Unbelievable, because she had the injury last year where she missed a good chunk of the season. But Paige Beckers, one of the true stars of the women's college game, is now out with an injury. That's one thing we haven't had to say a whole lot about the Colts so far in their their camp is someone being out with an injury. We talked about it a lot last year, but it hasn't come up nearly as much this year. Let's talk a little Colts football camp right now from the Indy Star. Nate Atkins, who covers the Colts, is joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline. And Nate, I know the storylines change almost daily. And as I just said, I'm kind of glad that the storylines don't involve injuries. But what stood out most recently today at Colts practice in your mind?
So today is just the, I guess it'd be the third day of full pads here at practice. And every time that that transition happens, things become a little bit, obviously it's ramped up, but it becomes a little bit of a time for the defense to sort of show out and make a statement. But today was by far the biggest statement yet for this Colts defense. Of course, it's going through a scheme change under Gus Bradley. It's got some new faces yet, like Yannick Ngakoue and Stephon Gilmore. And it was like today was the day where you saw all the potential of what it could be start to flash and pop with those stars. So Stephon Gilmore had some just remarkable plays in coverage where he came back and made plays on the ball. He always seems to know kind of where the route patterns are going and where the ball could be. Made a real physical hit on rookie Alec Pierce. It might have been flagged in a real game, but they just really asserted themselves. And DeForest Buckner just had an absolute monster day in the interior part of the line, just really messed up every single play that the offense tried to run. So you combine those two players with Yannick Ngakoue, who's really coming in tremendous shape, screaming around the edge, and you just all of a sudden see a defense that's got playmakers that are all of a sudden in position to make plays, where you know last year, in the past few years, where they've had a good defense that creates turnovers and that has finished in the top 10, they haven't really mess with quarterbacks the way that maybe you need to be a contender in the NFL these days. And I think it's just a training camp practice, obviously, and it's, I guess, an offense that has some young receivers. But there's at least a glimpse here that they have some stars that can really torment quarterbacks, and it should be fun to watch.
We're going to see somebody new at safety this year. Kari Willis, of course, with his retirement. Rodney McLeod has come in as a veteran, but also Nick Cross as a drafted rookie. What are we seeing at safety so far from the Colts? How do they line up? Have they got two on the field at a time? And what does it look like the rotation is going to be at this point?
Yeah, they always have two at a time out there. It's always Julian Blackman, who's the free safety, and he's lined up really far back from the ball, sort of as that very final kind of glass break in case of emergency option if the guys in front of him don't make plays. And that is strong safety in the box. Become a rotation between Nick Cross and Rodney McLeod, and they're both doing pretty well. They bring different strengths where Rodney McLeod has never really played that specific position, but he's just is so smart and experienced when it comes to run fits and kind of playing in some of their zone coverages and passing off routes. And Nick Cross has hit pretty well for being a rookie. He's not had mental mistakes, doesn't quite have the same physicality as Rodney does at this point in time, but you see some of his burst to the ball and also his playmaking. He had an interception on Matt Ryan, just the second pass we ever saw thrown here. So that'll be a fun battle to watch because they're just so dramatically different. One's a 20-year-old rookie. The other one's started more than 120 games in the NFL. But they're at least setting it up to where they have a couple of options there. But the guy who's really making it go is Julian Blackman at free safety. And he looks good right now. It's just one of those situations where the depth behind him at that specific spot gets really murky in a defense where you have to have that free safety. So they're putting a lot on Julian's plate, and they really need him to be out there this year.
Colts running all first team against first team. Is that basically what you're seeing in the scrimmage portion?
It goes that way. They do rotate at different levels. So what they'll often do is like a they do a rotation on offense where it's often six plays for the first team, four plays for the second team, and then two plays for the third team. But it ends up getting a little jumbled. Matt Ryan likes to take some reps with the second and third team so he can learn those receivers. And they do a few other substitutions, but that's mostly how it's gone. As you see, once the second team defense is out there, that's usually when the second team offense is out there.
Well, the matchup I'm really kind of thinking about here is Colts left tackle against the edge rush for the defense and how that is looking now that they've got on pads. And if you can get a a Matt Pryor or Bernard Raimann at that left tackle spot, what they look like in that position, because it's going to be an important position, I think, for the Colts this year.
No doubt. And so far, Matt Pryor's been the guy who's done first team reps with at left tackle. He's just a lot further along, even though it is a new-ish position to him. He's never been a full-time left tackle, played it for a start last year. But you just see the physical development for him. He's entering his fourth year in the NFL. He's a guy who dropped from 360 pounds in the offseason down to 345 at 6'7". He does boxing in the offseason, so he's getting a little lighter on his feet, but he's just this big, burly left tackle. And, I mean, Bernard Raimann is, they're intrigued by his potential for sure. He's a good kid who's working hard, but it's a big learning curve. He's only played tackle for a couple of years. He was a tight end in college. He grew up in Austria, so he didn't play outside of 1 year in high school. And we're seeing some of those rookie learning curves for him. He's definitely not as his leverage isn't as good. He's not as strong as other linemen, and that's to be expected. So they're kind of where it would make sense for them to be. I fully expect at this point for Matt Pryor to be the left tackle. But it's a job that also you have to really perform at, or you could lose. And it matters a lot. You have Matt Ryan, who, while he does throw the ball quick, he also played with a Pro Bowl left tackle and Jake Mathis in Atlanta for the past, ever since 2012. So you've got to have some solidity on that side of the line. And they're definitely being challenged right now, especially by Yannick Ngakoue, who's dropped down to, he's into the 230s and just looks chiseled and fast and gets under the pads. And it's definitely creating a trial by fire for both of those guys who are trying to figure out where they fit at left tackle.
Let's talk a little bit about tight end. I think it's an intriguing position for the Colts this year, trying to figure out, is Mo Alie-Cox really going to be the guy, or can one of these other guys threaten him for his playing time? I was expecting more Jelani Woods and Kylan Granson. You called out today Drew Ogletree. I think this is going to be an intriguing subject. What have you seen so far with Ogletree that you've liked?
So Drew's always been interesting to me because they drafted him out of sixth round out of Youngstown State. I mean, your initial reaction is it's just a small school player and how's he going to factor in? But he has such an interesting background, having played wide receiver for several years at Finley, then he transitioned to tight end. But he ended up being in college for like 6 years, and he got two football seasons in a single calendar year because of COVID. So this guy is much more physically developed than you almost ever see out of a rookie. It's sort of this very unique situation because of that COVID gap year has just put these guys in who really, I mean, physically he looks like a second, third-year player, but he's a rookie out here. And mentally he's further than that, too, because he's done both wide receiver and tight end, and he kind of understands a little bit more about what a full offense can do. So he's been getting some rotational first-team reps. Obviously, Mo Alie-Cox is definitely going to be that number one option there. But at number two right now, Ogletree is standing out as the guy who's picking up the fastest, who's the most physical out there. He had a nice one-handed grab where he left his feet in the end zone today. So it'll be an ongoing competition, though, because Kylan Granson, he's a very different style of tight end. He's just 6'2". He's more your F tight end who's kind of plays a sleeker route, who can split out. And then Jelani Woods is probably going to battle with Ogletree for some of that number two, at least number two in a blocking sense spot. And Jelani he's transitioning too. He didn't play tight end until a couple of years ago. And he's just not quite as sharp right now as Ogletree. Again, that happens to rookies, and he's got time to kind of work on that. And they knew it was going to be a process. So right now I think Ogletree's ahead in that battle, but it's probably going to be ongoing, and it's going to be a position too that they probably just expect to step back. No Jack Doyle, and these guys are rookies and second year players outside of Mo Alie-Cox, so they're just going to have to live with some ups and downs right now.
Now that they've actually had real football, and I think once they put on the pads, we start to see the 11-on-11 matchups, we've got real football now. And sometimes it exposes things, and you become aware of either holes, weaknesses, gaps, question marks. What have you seen 3 days of the pads and matching up? Is there anything that you've looked at and said, boy, I don't know if the Colts are good enough at that position, or I think maybe even the other side, I think they're fantastic at a place I never expected them to be?
Yeah, I think for where they're further along than I would have guessed would be in the secondary. You know, we knew they had talent there. Obviously, Stephon Gilmore, who's an All-Pro, Kenny Moore's a Pro Bowler. All the other players have some level of upside and talent, but just the way it's come together so far, the way that they're combining in this Seattle-style scheme, a lot of cover three, and just how clean it looks, has been impressive, and it shows just the immense work that Julian Blackman's put into the rehab to look 100%, which I never thought would happen by training camp. It's Nick Cross. Now he's sort of hit the ground running without mental mistakes. And it's even a guy like Brandon Faison, who's the cornerback they signed, who had been on the Raiders and Chargers in this scheme. You know, you thought that was more of a depth signing, but he looks like the starter there. He looks like the guy's been ready for this moment to kind of come out there in a scheme built around his length. And all of a sudden, that's made it so Isaiah Rodgers is just a backup, which is shocking because he's so fast and he's so great at tracking the ball down. And they'll be in a good position if that's what's going to happen, though. If he's going to be sort of an extra defensive back they can kind of pick packages for, that is where you want to be in the NFL rather than the reverse of quarterbacks figuring out what you can't do and going after your weakness. So that would be the positive one. The one that's a little concerning is the one that's always been a concern, which is the pass catchers. You know, I mentioned the tight ends are very up and down outside of Mo Alie-Cox right now. And wide receiver, it's a mixed bag there too. I mean, Ashton Doolin has really turned heads this camp and looks like a guy who's definitely going to have a role in this offense. And Paris Campbell looks like he has a great connection with Matt Ryan. But there are moments here now that we're seeing the pads come on where separation isn't great. And there are some inconsistencies. There's some drops. There's some routes not run the way that Matt Ryan wants them run. And it's allowed some of these, when they're in team settings, Yannick Ngakoue and DeForest Buckner to really feast because it's just taking these receivers a little bit to get going. There's no one who wins sort of immediately off the snap of the ball outside of maybe Michael Pittman Jr. sometimes, and he's getting a lot of attention. So really that's, you combine those two, and when the secondary has the receiver's way so far, that's why the offense has had a hard time moving the ball, and that's what they're trying to make strides at now.
He is at @NateAtkins_ on Twitter. Be sure you give him a follow. Be sure you read what he writes in the Indy Star. Nate, appreciate the time. Enjoy your coverage.
Oh, thanks so much. Anytime.
Yep, Nate Atkins joining us on the Masters Heating and Cooling Hotline here on the Sports Rush. Of course, you can connect with us at 46862 on the Parkview Sports Medicine text line, 46862. Still coming up on the show, we're going to give you a replay. Sean Sidlowski has announced that, no, he is not retiring. He's actually continuing his career. And it's going to be with the Orlando Solar Bears. We had a chance to talk to Sid yesterday. We'll replay that conversation. And we will talk to Eric Dutkevich yet again, back for more coverage of high school football this year. Dute, as we call him on air, he will join us coming up at about 5:35. We'll take a timeout. We'll come back. It is the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM. We talked about this yesterday. Vin Scully passed away at the age of 94, 67-year career as the Dodgers radio play-by-play broadcaster. And we talked about broadcasters that you kind of grew up with. They kind of became almost a second father because you listened to them every night. Sometimes they were the ones that put you to bed because you listened to baseball. I mean, I think in my generation, and of course my generation are kids that grew up anywhere from the late 60s into the 70s, that was a generation where you listened to your sports on the radio. There were not a lot of options as far as TV broadcast, and so you became very close to the radio broadcaster. I mean, Reds baseball. I was lucky if it was picked as the game of the week. That was the only way I actually saw a game, was if the Cincinnati Reds got selected for the NBC Saturday afternoon broadcast. And if not, it was Marty Brenneman every night giving me Reds baseball as I laid there in bed growing up as a kid. And so, you know, we often have no other way to say it, but we almost have intimate type relationships with the broadcasters of sports. And you said Mark Boyle was somebody that you grew up admiring and listening to down in Indy.
Yeah, I always loved listening to Pacers games as a kid. Of course, that was the great era of the Pacers as well, with Reggie Miller leading the team and Jalen Rose and the Davis.
I had the big red machine, so it didn't hurt that the Reds were really good too.
I think that always helps. And of course, back then, you couldn't watch every Pacers game on TV at a time either. So the radio broadcast was a big deal. Still is.
That was before the regional networks.
Yeah.
Caleb, just to give you an idea, I was before cable. So there wasn't an option. We had four television stations when I was growing up as a child. Imagine that. Probably have some listeners right now in total disbelief, thinking they only had four channels. How did they live? It was like Little House on the Prairie is what it was like. 46862 is our Parkview Sports Medicine text line. If you got any questions, comments, or suggestions, go ahead and fire away at 46862. Coming up, what do the Colts do at wide receiver? Do they still need one? Is there one available? Should they pull the trigger? What about T.Y. Hilton? Also, new tin caps arriving in town. In fact, we're going to see one in the lineup tonight. We'll tell you about that. We've got Sean Sidlowski. Replay from yesterday when we had a chance to talk to Sid about his move going down to Orlando to play for the Solar Bears. And Eric Dukevich will join us to give us previews of the NECC and ACAC. It's all coming up before 6 o'clock right here on the Sports Rush on 1380 The Fan and 100.9 FM.
Podcasts by Federated Media.